evening, Truth Seekers. Man, Stephanie Miller must be hard of hearing. She turns these headphones up so loud. I should have tested them before I put them on. Hey, welcome, America. Live, coast to coast and around the globe. Once again, it's the Mike Malloy Program. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen, citizen blogger, investigative journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, broadcasting live the entire week while the Malloys are off on a much-needed vacation, actually staycation, as I understand it. And so we're in here, we're all week with you. Glad you can join us. We are, as I say, broadcasting from Los Angeles, from earthquake country. Just within the last hour, I believe, we had an earthquake. Was it 5.4, Tony? 5.4, centered near San Diego. But, I didn't even feel it. Did you feel it, Tom? A little bit? You felt it? I didn't feel it. I was actually on the way over here to the studio, so I totally ripped off. Missed it. Missed it entirely, but I hear that it's okay. The reports on the local news out here say there is no damage, at least yet, reported. A little bit of rocking and stuff going on. If that should happen again during the show, we will let you know because you will hear me screaming like a little girl and running for the door. Maybe. Anyway, big show for you tonight. 877-520-1150 is our phone number. Tonight and all week, leave the Malloys alone. Call us instead. 877-520-1150. Also, over at the Brad blog, my computer's hanging, so there you go. But over at Brad blog, you can go to the chat room at bradblog.com. Jeannie Dean and Desi Doyen are holding things down there tonight. I will do my best, as ever, to keep my eyes on the chat room as much as I can. And let's see, what else do I have to get out of the way here, business-wise? Coming up on the show tonight, David Roberts from Grist. Paging Dr. Grist. That's his Twitter name, Dr. Grist. He will be joining us to talk about that huge ripoff, that scam that is cap and trade. It's all a huge scam. As we all know, Al Gore is just trying to line his pockets. We're going to be asking him about that and about the future of clean energy and climate legislation in the Congress, in the Senate, and when the hell the Democrats are going to figure out that they will never, ever, ever have a better backdrop to push for clean, renewable energy now than they do at this moment with this oil gusher in the Gulf, which continues unabated, will continue unabated. It looks like likely until August at the earliest, until those relief wells get in there. It's an unbelievable disaster, but you wouldn't know it because, there's more important things. LeBron James, where's he going to go? That's what we have to talk about. That's what we will talk about for the next 3 hours. Where will LeBron James go? No, we're not going to. As usual, we are going to talk about stuff that matters, whether you like it or not. So David Roberts is going to join us, talk about cap and trade legislation, climate change legislation, renewable energy legislation. He'll be with us in the second hour. And while I was joking about the scam that is cap and trade, we will be talking to him about that, and we will welcome your calls. Skeptics invited. We don't, we're not afraid of skeptics. We're not afraid of people who disagree. I like to point out that Mike doesn't care to hear from the wingnuts, but I don't mind. I loves me the wingnuts. Bring it on. 877-520-1150. Coming up here momentarily. Let's see, what else did I want to make sure that I hit? Oh, yeah. Well, coming up momentarily, we're going to have the L.A. County Registrar Recorder Clerk, boy, he's got an impossibly long title. The L.A. County Registrar, Dean Logan, is going to be joining us to explain himself to me as to why it is that when I went to, well, I'll back it up, 2 years ago when I went to vote in the June primary, the statewide primary in June of 08, the electronic voting system out here, made by ESNS, misprinted 4 out of 12 of my votes. Luckily, I noticed. And they confiscated the machines, quarantined them, did a big study, came back, found out, well, that the poll workers had punched the wrong numbers into the machine. That was their explanation 2 years ago. So surely when I went to vote last June, all of this would have been taken care of, fixed, corrected, so it couldn't happen again, right? Me, the guy who writes about electronic voting, you may know me from my work on e-voting and election fraud and all of that over at bradblog.com. Me, of all people, making sure at my precinct that I would be able to vote without having an error like that. You would think 2 years later. So I went to vote June, just this last month, statewide primary again. Guess what happened? On two different machines. Well, the registrar has now come out. His office has put out a five-page report on all of those failures that I listed as I wrote about it that night on June 8th, about a month ago, at the Brad blog. And they went through failure by failure. There was a total of six failures, including I was given the wrong language. I had to vote in Vietnamese at first. Then once they got it in English, it was for the wrong congressional district. My precinct just gave up, so I went to a different precinct, 10 feet away across the room in the same polling place, tried their machine, and in that case, I was given the ballot for the Peace and Freedom Party instead of the one that I was trying to vote. And they couldn't figure out how to make it give me the party ballot that I wanted. So had I, you know, luckily I caught the problem, had I gone through and voted and printed out the ballot, why it would have all been wrong again. Same problem 2 years later. Well, they've come out with a five-page report now to explain what happened, and I've posted it tonight just before airtime over at bradblog.com. If you want to get a jump on it, you can go read it over there, or you can wait for the registrar of voters to come here and explain himself and what they plan to do about it now, as L.A. County, the largest voting jurisdiction in the country, bigger than some 30 states combined, they're looking for a new voting system. I wonder if it'll be as crappy as the one they have now. We'll find out when Dean Logan joins us in just a few moments. Let's see. Also, some breaking news. Well, a couple of points. You know, I know a lot of people, they say, oh, Brad, all you do is you cover this election fraud stuff, this e-voting stuff. Doesn't anything else matter? Well, yeah, it does matter. Of course it does. But if you can't throw out the guys you voted in the first place, if you don't know that those are the, you know, the people in office actually deserve to be in office, where does it get you? Go back and listen to our archives from last night, after we're done here, of course, at bradblog.com, my interview with Vic Rawl, the guy who was defeated, supposedly, by Alvin Green in South Carolina, who nobody ever heard of this Alvin Green. Nobody, including the Democratic Party, even though Alvin Green now is the nominee, the Democratic nominee for the U.S. Senate. This isn't the state Senate seat. It's the U.S. Senate. And nobody ever heard of the guy. He never campaigned. He's got no money. He's got no job. Yet he will be facing Jim DeMint this November. You see, these things, they seem like they matter to me. So whether you want to talk about LeBron James or Lindsay Lohan or politics, teabaggery, right, left, red, blue, liberal, conservative, Democratic, Republican, all of that nonsense, well, that's fine. Well, we'll talk about that, too. We'll talk about that tomorrow night. Howie Klein will be joining us tomorrow, I believe, from Down with Tyranny in Huffington Post. And we'll be talking about politics and blue dogs and all the rest. But this election stuff matters. There is an election coming up. And to that end, aside from Dean Logan joining us shortly, we will tomorrow night have some breaking news about a long-running e-voting fraud case. I'm not going to tell you what state yet. I'll just tease it at that. But we've got some breaking news, some disturbing breaking news in this case. Wait till you hear that. Tomorrow we will have the scoop at Brad Blog and here on the Mike Malloy Show, or as we like to call it, the MMS. let's see. Also, Friday, one guy who really doesn't like me talking about electronic voting, he canceled. He wrote Mike Malloy to tell him he was canceling his podcast subscription because that Brad Friedman, he cringes every time Brad Friedman comes on and talks about electronic voting because this guy thinks that electronic voting is great. And he will be joining us later this week to tell us why he canceled his podcast subscription to Mike Malloy, why he thinks e-voting is great, why he thinks I suck. And I'm going to try to give him the whole hour to come on and tell me why I suck. So I will look forward to that. I hope you will, too. We'll see who's right and wrong. Should be a lively debate. And by the way, to make up for the loss of his podcast subscription, if you like my guest hosting, feel free to head on over to MikeMalloy.com and support this radio program and progressive radio by getting a podcast. So subscribe over there, and you get them free every night. In the meantime, while I'm here broadcasting, you get them free every night anyway because I post them at bradblog.com where you can check them out. All right, coming up after this break, Dean Logan, registrar of L.A. County, will tell me why my vote just can't seem to be cast in L.A. County. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Oh, yeah. Oh, I got to go around. Yeah, I know. That's my fault. I'll give you the teaser on it. It was, let's see, human error, inadequate voting systems, limitations, design flaws, all of that in the electronic voting that voting system that L.A. County spent some $25 million on. And how many people actually use that electronic system this year? The one for disabled voters that I tried to use 2 years in a row? 109 people out of some 4 million voters in Los Angeles. Well, that was worth the money, wasn't it? You decide. We'll be back with Dean Logan in a brief segment because I went long right after this. Brad, in for Malloy. Born under a bad sign. I've been down since I began to crawl. If it wasn't for bad welcome back. It's 23 minutes after the hour. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike Malloy tonight and all week. And for those of you in the BradBlog.com chat room, I can't read your chats right now because my Firefox is hanging. And, well, that'll teach us for using computers on mission-critical issues like, chat rooms while we're on the air and, voting. To that end, I am joined tonight by, by Los Angeles County Registrar, Recorder, County Clerk, the man with the longest possible title in the world. Dean Logan joins me tonight to explain why, once again, this last June, I was unable to cast a vote on L.A. County's electronic voting system. Oh, Dean, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Hello.
I want to, thank you for giving us this time here tonight to explain what happened in my case with my votes now 2 years running. The problems that I had, as you know, Dean, 2 years ago in June of 08, the e-voting system misprinted 4 out of 12 of my votes. And then last month when I tried to vote two different voting machines, I was unable to get the correct ballot for either the party that I was attempting to vote for or the sometimes the language I wanted to vote in, which was English, and certainly the congressional district that I was actually in. So all kinds of problems. Your office put together a full 5-page report, which we posted on BradBlog. And I really appreciate that report and the time you've given to me offline via email and so forth, explaining what happened. So we'll have more time after the upcoming break. But give us just the summary here, if that's possible, of what happened when I tried to vote again this year.
Well, I guess to summarize, two quick things that I would be remiss if I didn't say is I think it's important for people to know that you did actually get to cast a vote in both those elections. So your vote was cast. That doesn't overshadow the fact that your attempt to use the disability access equipment at the polling places failed and failed in a bad way both times. The bottom line is both of these occurrences were in primary elections where we have or had a modified closed primary in California that had multiple parties, multiple ballot styles, and the limitations of the system that we have require that in order to initiate that ballot with those variables in a primary, the poll worker has to enter in a party and ballot style code to bring up the correct ballot. And in both elections where you attempted to use the system, and in this case, both precincts at your polling location,
right?
They did not enter the correct code. They instead entered a numeric code that is associated with the precinct and the polling place, rather than the ballot code that was included in their supplies specific to the voting system.
Which raises the question, and we'll hit it a little bit after the break, as to why we have a system which relies on poll workers to have to know how to operate and how to punch in codes and numbers, and that they, that they punched in what they thought was the appropriate number, and instead of rejecting that number, it accepted it, but then proceeded to give me the wrong ballot. What we did find, and what your report concludes, and we'll get into this in a little bit more detail, was that I'm reading from the conclusion of the report here. This incident clearly points to design weaknesses and system limitations that exceed a reasonable level of usability and complexity of the audio ballot booth during a modified closed primary election process. Will, after we come back from this break, and yes, I was able to vote in both cases because I was able to vote on a paper ballot manually instead of being forced to rely on the electronic machine. More with Dean Logan, Registrar of Voters. I'm Brad, in for Mike. Stay with us. We're working on it. Brad Friedman of Brad Blog in for Mike Malloy, speaking with the LA County Registrar, Recorder, County Clerk Dean Logan concerning my voting system, my problem of voting in this last June election and the one 2 years ago on the electronic voting system that we still use out here in Los Angeles County, the largest voting jurisdiction in the nation. And Dean Logan, I like to say, and you've corrected me on this before, but that as far as LA County is the largest voting jurisdiction, larger than 30-something states. But you had a disagreement with that characterization.
No, I don't think I did, Brad.
Okay.
I don't think I did. As far as registered voter population, we are larger than 30-some states. I can't remember if it's 32 or 34, but you're in the ballpark.
Okay, good. Well, then that was the one thing you didn't correct me on, and so you corrected me on that. So thank you. It's huge. It's a huge task that you are forced to pull off. And unfortunately, we have to your report that you issued that is now posted at bradblog.com details human error, design weaknesses, and system limitations in the ESNS electronic voting system that we currently use out here in Los Angeles, and that a combination sort of all of the above led to the failures that I faced trying to cast my vote once again on these systems. And by the way, Dean, you know what precinct I vote at. I'd have thought you would have paid special attention to make sure they got it right at my precinct.
Well, what might surprise you, Brad, is we actually did pay attention to that.
You did?
And so from a mechanical standpoint, I can assure you that the equipment that was issued to that poll site was checked after it was set up and put in place election morning. And as we discovered in the report, mechanically, the equipment worked properly. But you know what? I also don't want to pin this on a poll worker. I think that, you know, as we sort of got into a little earlier, this is a pile on of a whole bunch of stuff that we rely on poll workers to do in an election. It's in a primary, which only comes, once every 2 years, or sometimes mm-hmm. twice when there's a presidential primary. But it's an unreasonable expectation that the way the system has been set up, and we recognize that. We're trying to address that, hopefully we're going to get that turned around. But this was a very complicated election where we are somewhat forced to, by our current legal framework and regulatory environment around voting systems, to rely on poll workers to do just a Herculean task on election day.
And I agree. And we're asking them too often, not just here in L.A. County, but all across the country, to be, you know, computer scientists and rocket scientists. And that's just one of the problems that we face. Another one is the fact that for all of the money that was spent, and we're talking about, we'll just, for purposes of this conversation, Dean, call it millions and millions, that were spent on these electronic systems to be compliant with HAVA and its disabled voter requirements. 109 ballots were cast on these electronic systems here in L.A. County for all the millions that we ended up spending on them. Was that a wise investment? And how will we avoid such an apparently unwise investment in a new system? Because I know you're now looking for a new system to replace this one.
Well, and to replace the whole voting system. But I think to your point, I don't know that it's necessarily appropriate for me as an election administrator to place a value on the policy decision that Congress made with regard to accessible voting devices. I think that clearly there was an issue after the 2000 presidential election cycle, that there was some need for electoral reform. The disability access piece was a significant part of that debate when the Help America Vote Act was moving through Congress. And I think the idea or the vision that's in that policy is one that I would think most people would agree that any eligible voter ought to have the opportunity to vote a secret ballot and to do that without forcing them to have the assistance of someone else or to give up their secrecy. I think the value of that makes a lot of sense.
Well, the value of that does make sense, but sure. When everybody else is then unable to know if their vote was counted or counted accurately,
I don't think that's the case in LA County.
Okay.
I mean, I think the compliance of the law is you have to, the letter of the law is you have to have one piece of equipment in each precinct that allows for that. I think where I was going with that is that, as with much of HAVA, you know, and as we look back on it, the idea of it is pretty good. The value of it's pretty good, but the systems, the development, and the infrastructure to support it wasn't in place. So a lot of things were put together. They were rushed through. State laws had to be changed to comply with those. Decisions had to be made. As you point out, money was made available quite possibly for all purposes for the first time from the federal government to support election reform out in the states, but it was, you know, there was time frames associated with how quickly it had to be spent. And so, you know, again, the idea behind it, I think, is it's hard to argue against. The reality is, just as the report in your experience points out, is you know, the systems weren't up to meeting that value in conjunction with all the other layers of regulation and variables associated with an election like this primary.
Okay, so can we agree at least then that the one thing I think we agree in is that the current system that is used here in Los Angeles, the largest voting jurisdiction in the country, larger than 30-something states, that the e-voting system we use is inadequate and needs to be replaced with something else. We can agree with that?
For the the most part, I would not characterize our system as an e-voting system. Our ballots are, it's an optical scan voting system. It's inadequate in a primary to meet the variables and to meet the disability requirements. I'm not sure that it's any less adequate than other systems that are in place around the country to meet that disability requirement given the same variables.
You don't consider the voting system that we use in L.A. County to be an e-voting system?
No, I mean it uses an electronic marking device to mark a vote using the disability equipment.
But beyond that, the
voting system is an optical scan voting system. It's the ballot is a paper ballot with ink on it that is scanned through to count the ballot.
That is scanned electronically in a computer, and then we just rely on whatever the computer tells us is the
electronic tabulation. Yes, I guess the distinction I would make is usually people associate e-voting with an electronic voting device where they're voting on a touchscreen. So I guess I'm just making that distinction.
Okay, I appreciate that. Now, looking ahead, we're going to hopefully move beyond the current ESNS system that we have that has failed. And by the way, your report, or actually, I don't know if you went into the details in the report, but you did with me via email to explain why it is that while we had 109 voters who used this electronic audio ballot system, I was the only one whose ballot failed both this time and I guess 2 years ago. Am I just lucky, or are you?
Well, I think as I pointed out to you, Brad, I think you know there certainly could be other voters who attempted to or started to use the disability voting system and then for whatever reason stopped and went back to a regular ballot. There's no way for us to know that unless it was reported.
Uh-huh.
But I think the point that I was making on the 109 that were cast on those using that equipment is that they didn't experience the same thing you did, because if they had, there are things that would have been visible. It would have generated the wrong ballot style when they attempted to put that ballot into the precinct ballot reader after it was produced. There were things that would have triggered that, and that didn't happen in that 109 cases.
Speaking with Dean Logan, the Los Angeles County Registrar, Recorder, County Clerk, and if you'd like to give us a call, 877-520-1150 is our phone number. I know that actually Los Angeles delays the show for 1 hour, so we'll probably get all kinds of calls for you next hour, Dean, when you're not here. But looking forward, we're now looking at finding a new system, and you're looking the VSAP. It stands for VSAP. What does that stand for?
Voting Systems Assessment Project.
Okay, and you're looking at all kinds of systems. You've told me that everything is on the table. Is hand-counted, hand-marked, precinct-based, hand-counted paper ballots on the table as a possibility for Los Angeles County, Dean Logan?
Well, let me start by saying that we're not looking at systems yet. We're starting. The whole premise of the project is to recognize that there is no system currently available today that that's designed and has a regulatory framework that would be an improvement in LA County, given our size and our variables. So we basically stepped away from that and said, okay, if we're going to make an investment, which is going to end up being a sizable investment, I would suspect, in a new system, and we're going to modernize voting in Los Angeles County, what does that system need to be able to do, and what are the values and the principles that should be in place for that? That's where we're starting. Now, once those values and the data to back those up from dialogue with voters, different stakeholder groups, et cetera, are in place, then, yeah, we'll start looking at systems. But I think in addition to looking at systems, I'm convinced we're also going to have to look at modifications to the regulatory environment with regard to systems, or even with regard to the manner in which elections are conducted.
Well, before we talk about changing regulatory systems, when I was able to participate in one of the meetings that you had with the Voting Systems Assessment Project, and you did look at, should we use DREs, touchscreen type systems, or should we use paper-based op scan systems? But there was no discussion, should we use hand-marked, hand-counted paper ballots? So is that something that is in play? Has that been, let's start there. this way? Has that been ruled out?
It absolutely has not been ruled out. It is part of the dialogue. The focus groups that we've done recently did address that. Surveys that we did both over the internet, an email survey and a voter survey that were done, a random selection of LA County voters, did include questions around that issue. We're going to do more stakeholder groups. We're going to do one with voting integrity activists that hopefully you're going to be involved in, and certainly that's part of the discussion. The only distinction I would make is that the meeting you went to, we provide examples of existing systems to ask voters what their reaction to that is. I don't believe that we've asked voters the question of should we go to those systems yet. I think what we're trying to decipher right now is, what do you like about your current voting experience? What do you not like about it? What do you expect from your voting experience? And what's important to you in that voting experience?
Well, I think that what all citizens should expect is for them to be able to oversee their own votes and to know they were counted accurately. Whether we like that or not, whether it's as fun as having a touchscreen machine with Pac-Man on it, might be a different issue. So I don't know if it needs to be fun. I do know it needs to be overseeable, because we're having too damn many problems with elections in this country. We're going to talk about that. I'll let you respond after this break. Speaking with L.A. County Registrar Dean Logan about how to save democracy in America, or at least in L.A., because everything starts in California, so let's get it right here, and maybe the rest of the country will follow. Brad, in for Malloy. Stay with us.
Let us not speak falsely now. The hour is getting late, 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 late.
Little black boxes in cute little rows. A screen that says touch me so cheerfully glows. No paper trail, a make-believe poll. Cast your vote down the memory hole. Little black box where your little vote goes. Down and down the memory hole. Oh, where did your little vote go? Nobody knows. Little black box.
Well, someone who maybe knows where your vote goes down that memory hole, Dean Logan, the registrar, L.A. County Registrar of Voters, joins us here for the last few minutes. And we will get to your calls, 877-520-1150. If I can't get to you before the top of this hour, though, I will try. If I can't, I will get you after the top of the hour news to answer your questions. I know we have a blind voter, Tim in Detroit, has a question for me that I will be happy to answer. Okay, Dean Logan. Well, we have figured out what seems to be the cause for the problem that I had trying to vote again. Design weaknesses, system limitations, that entire report that your office issued on my at least six failures in trying to cast a vote on the ESNS electronic systems is over at bradblog.com in full if folks would like to read it. And we're talking about what will replace it in the future, since you're looking for a new system. Now, we're planning on spending millions, at least, I suspect, on this new voting system, Dean Logan. And we were talking about hand-counted, hand-marked paper ballots and whether that was on the table. You said, yes, it is. Can I get a commitment from you tonight, perchance, that in the process of looking for a new system, that we will at least do due diligence here and run a hand-counted, hand-marked, hand-counted paper ballot pilot program, perhaps with the LA League of Women Voters? I know that they do all kinds of hand-counted, hand-marked paper ballot elections. They have for years. They could help us out in this pilot program. Can I get a commitment from you, Dean Logan, for such a pilot program?
Well, I'll make the commitment that we will look at those kind of systems just as we will any others. I would argue that in our current environment, because we're required under California law to do a hand tally of 1% of the precincts, the ballots cast in 1% of the precincts, that we have some pretty good data on what's involved in doing a hand count on our current system. But we also have a current system that is a ballot that I expect will not resemble what the future ballot looks like. So I'm not sure that going beyond the data that we already have through the 1% manual tally, which is pretty good data.
But that's not data on, that's not the type of hand counting we're talking about. We're talking about the sort of thing that they do in 40% of New Hampshire, where at the end of the day, before the ballots move anywhere at the precinct, the whole community comes in, they open that ballot box in front of everybody, all parties, all video cameras. It's a community activity. They all count the ballots right then and post the results right there at the precinct before those ballots move anywhere. It's a very difficult system to game. It's 100% transparent. And as far as I know, we've never done anything like that in L.A. County.
Well, I don't know if we've done anything like that in L.A. County either, but I can tell you that there's a world of difference. Well, first of all, I don't think there's a big difference in terms of the actual mechanics of how they hand count those ballots. The location is different, the time is different, but the mechanics of hand counting them and hand tallying them is, in fact, the way the 1% is done. It is done transparent. Anybody can come and watch that. It actually takes several days, and it's available for people to observe. But we're also talking about a jurisdiction that has 5,000 different precincts and polling places. We're talking about, you know, polls closing at 8 o'clock at night and people wanting election results and wanting that process to be transparent. I think.
But, I should add, because a lot of people think it's about time, in New Hampshire, they're done quite frequently. They are done at the hand-counting precincts before the Diebold-counted precincts are done in New Hampshire. It's not a long process if the precincts are small enough that we're only talking about a couple hundred votes to count each night.
Well, but you're also talking about, about tens of thousands of people that need to be available to do that count and to be paid to do that count.
Right.
So, I mean, it's all scalable. I think your point is a fair one in terms of looking at that model. I guess what I would say is that that part of that due diligence would be finding a model that is scalable to L.A. County. I don't know that New Hampshire fits there. I mean, given your scenario about the number of states smaller in registered voters than L.A. County in full, I bet New Hampshire fits into that. So I think there's a lot of discussion going on in voting integrity circles about hand-counted ballots at the precinct, but there's a lot of jurisdictions that have much smaller-sized precincts and smaller-sized states or counties. And I don't see anybody really seriously looking at that.
I got to
start that discussion in the largest jurisdiction in the country.
Let's start at tens of thousands of voters counting and being paid to count those ballots. That sounds great to me. Let's continue the discussion. I thank you, Dean Logan, Registrar of Voters in L.A. County. I do appreciate your attention to this, and I suspect the conversation will continue. Thank you, sir, for your time.
Thank you.
All right. We'll be right back with your calls and much more, and Dean Roberts on that cap and trade scam right after this. Program. Brad Friedman sitting in for Mike tonight. I am your friendly and humble citizen, investigative journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker in all week for Mike Malloy. And I was, I'll try to get this other shot. I just tweeted. I was up on the roof here at the Clear Channel building in Burbank from where we are broadcasting. I took a shot of the clouds rolling over the Hollywood Hills, the hills where the Hollywood sign would otherwise be were it not for the clouds. And I twit-picked it over to, if you're following me on Twitter, if you're not, why not? You can follow me at The Brad Blog. That's my Twitter name. And I put a shot up of those hills. And I'll also try to, in the next break, I'll toss one up from the NBC building, which is right out our studio window here where they shoot the Tonight Show, which I will not be on tonight for some reason. I don't understand it. Okay, coming up very shortly, we're going to have David Roberts, a man with a very trustworthy beard from the from grist.org, who reports on clean energy, climate legislation, and so forth. He will explain why it is that the cap and trade scheme is such a scam, and how Al Gore is really trying to steal your money. So if you have any questions about that, if you're skeptical about cap and trade, because I saw on Fox News that it's an evil scam, give us a call. You can get in now at 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. I think that David Roberts is in favor of it. So give us a call and be skeptical. We like skepticism. And to that end, finishing up our last hour here, we had Dean Logan, the registrar, recorder, county clerk from Los Angeles County, explaining why it was that two primaries in a row now going. I have been unable to cast a vote on the electronic voting system out here in L.A. It continues to fail. It prints out, in the first instance, 4 out of 12 of my votes incorrectly. And mind you, this is a system made for blind people, essentially, the one that I was using, the audio ballot system. But I'm not blind. So I was able to notice that 4 out of 12 of my votes had been printed by the e-voting system incorrectly. A blind voter may not have noticed. Yet, to that end, I've got a caller that I want to get to here on that topic. Tim from Detroit calls us and has a question on that topic. Tim, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Well, hi, Brad, and I do want to, you know, kind of address a question or sort of a comment.
Yeah.
I've lost my sight for several years, and I can only perceive a light.
Mm-hmm.
So the last several elections that I've voted, I've actually gone absentee because I do not trust the e-voting systems. My district has them. And the whole history of these machines, I mean, they're very inaccurate. Whenever any independent analysts look at these machines, I mean, they can be hacked. The votes come out inaccurately.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the NFB basically got bought off by Bob Ney and his crowd back in the early 2000s.
That's the National Federation for the Blind, for those folks who don't know. Yeah, they got bought off, and National Federation for the Blind received $1 million from Diebold
right.
at exactly that time that they were pushing out these crappy machines to all of America. And, Tim, they used folks like you.
Yes.
If you were against electronic voting, it was because you hated blind people. And now they're doing the same thing. You know that. And, well, and I want to let the listeners know, they're doing the same thing right now with internet voting. As insane as e-voting is, now they want to push it to the internet. They're using our troops as guinea pigs. And if you're against internet voting, oh, it's because you hate the troops. Same scam.
Well, this goes to our democratic system, too, because, okay, just to take it down to a personal level, I mean, the very fact is, now that I do vote, I use an absentee system, but and I trust. I mean, it boils down to trust once again. I mean, I have to trust someone there to actually, you know, help me fill out the ballot.
Right.
And while I think that person that I have helped me is trustworthy, I can't know for sure, right? And the problem
right.
is, can't we develop some sort of a system that you know, the blind people can also use? I mean, I was thinking, for example, if the government could fund some sort of a Braille voting system,
mm-hmm.
and therefore other people who could read Braille could verify if these votes in fact were accurate.
Well, in fact, there are tactile voting systems made for the disabled, and the e-voting industry and election officials have essentially shut them out. Out here in California, they wouldn't even allow a system that was put forward for certification. Mind you, certification is very, very, very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these tactile systems, which are paper and let you feel the system, you know, who you're voting for and so forth,
right.
They don't cost a lot of money. So you don't have a Diebold or an ESNS to have, you know, $110,000 to go through certification testing.
Well, plus, well, my feeling is, I mean, let's just make it a purely publicly funded thing. I mean, don't listen to the Republicans. I mean, they're against government.
Yeah.
The Democrats should put that through Congress. This should be completely funded federally, and every state should be mandated to have it. I mean, this is completely unjust where, I mean, not just blind people, but all people's votes are held hostage by these private companies. It's a complete scam, and our democracy is in great danger now with this.
It is. And, Tim, I do appreciate your call. I got to move on here, but I do appreciate your call because, you know, early on in this whole battle, when you had the National Federation for the Blind, and by the way, you still have it now. You have this jerk, Jim Dixon, who basically threatens to sue everybody's pants off. He goes into Congress. He goes to these Democrats. He scares the crap out of them, says, if you don't do this or that, I will sue you. And, oh, I'm blind. I don't want a paper trail, or I'll sue you.
He's a very cynical man. The organization has become really bought off now by a lot of these corporate interests. They're doing a disservice to blind people. They really are.
Yeah, they sure as hell are. And frankly, they used blind people. And so when it came up, you know, and I saw this, and legislators will still tell you today, oh, well, we have to have these systems because blind people need them. But, you know, I spoke with blind folks early on, and they said, hey, I may be blind, but I'm not stupid. I would like there to be a record of how to vote.
Well, plus voting is, of course, a right in the Constitution, no matter what the Supreme Court says.
Is it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's not in the language, but I mean, I go back to the words "we the people." I mean, how are we to express ourselves if not by voting, right?
It makes sense to me. There is not, unfortunately, a constitutional right to vote. That needs to change, and those who would keep you from voting ought to be thrown in jail. It ought to be a felony to keep anybody from voting, to cage voters off the rolls, to suppress the vote. Anyway, Tim, I do appreciate your call, and thank you for being so well informed on this. Bless you, sir, and I would like you to vote independently and privately, but I want everybody's vote to be counted and countable before, during, and after an election, seems to me.
We need to push the Democrats on this. I mean, this whole South Carolina thing. I mean, I couldn't believe what happened.
Yep.
I mean, this guy totally unknown. And you know what? What's problematic is there have been some talk show hosts on this network, you know. And I mean, I can name names who sat there and acted like these voters in South Carolina somehow voluntarily voted for this guy who they didn't know that the guy has a lot of issues. He has felonies and so on. He has no job. And yet the Democrat, the primary voters down there just voted for him spontaneously?
Yeah, that's it. They just all of a sudden voted for a guy they'd never heard of, and he got 60% of the vote. Insane! No, but don't look at the machines. They're not the droids you're looking for. Thanks, Tim. I got to run.
You bet.
All right, brother. It's absolutely insane. A question from the bradblog.com chat room. My computer has finally rebooted, and I'm able to get in there. Some fella had asked, that's his chat name, some fella, does Brad believe in dispensing with machines altogether? I assume he means machines on the for voting. It's not about the machines. It's about concealed vote counting. It's about secret vote counting. It's about being able to go to an election after it's done, if you have any question about it, and I mean any citizen, not a computer scientist, but any citizen can go look at their vote, at the ballots, and determine that, and know that they're looking at the voter intent, and know that the vote, that the election was counted accurately as per the voter's intent. That's all I ask. If you could do it with the machine and lasers, if you need a bionic man to do it, fine. As long as it's 100% transparent and every citizen can know that their democracy has been accurately recorded. That's what matters here. Do you understand? It's not about any particular system. It's about citizen oversight. If we are going to have a government that is about we the people, if we are going to have self-governance, then we need to be able to govern, to oversee our government. Not proprietary computers from private corporations, and not even open source voting systems that we don't know if the computer code used today was the same one we examined yesterday. It's madness. People, here's the deal. I got to go to a break. But in 15 seconds, let me tell you my system. You vote on a piece of paper, you put it in a clear, translucent box, you keep it on the table all day. At the end of the polls, you take it out, you open it, you count it with your eyeballs, with everybody watching, all parties, video cameras rolling, you post the results at the precinct before the ballots move anywhere. It ain't rocket science, people. Brad, in from Malloy, Dave Roberts next.
In the summertime, when the weather is hot, you can stretch right up.
Yeah, I got women on my mind. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy program. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike Malloy. I'm also of the Green News Report for those folks who received that fine 6 minutes of Green News politics analysis and snarky comment. Along with my co-host, Desi Doyen. You can listen to that at greennews.bradblog.com. And on that beat, one of the important things that we cover, of course, is climate change and clean energy legislation that continues to slog its way, sort of, kind of, through Congress, not coming nearly as fast as that gusher in the Gulf. And you would think, with that gusher in the Gulf, that climate change legislation would be front and center by every damn Democrat in Congress and in the White House 24/7 at this point, since I've argued they will never have a better backdrop for pushing for clean energy legislation, in my opinion. To that end, we're joined now by David Roberts, or as we like to say, paging Dr. Grist. That's, hey, Dave. Dr. Grist, Dr. Grist is his Twitter name. And if you follow him on Twitter, you may know the inside joke about his trustworthy beard. But more importantly, David Roberts is a staff writer for Grist.org. Focusing on politics, climate, and energy, he has contributed to or been featured in the New York Times, Boston Globe, Fast Company, Huffington Post, Outside Magazine, and Wired. Has appeared as a guest on the Fox Network's Hannity and Combs, as well as the Weather Channel's weekly environmental news show, The Climate Code. He joins us tonight to explain Al Gore's scam that is cap and trade. Hey, David, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Hey, Brad, how's it going?
Actually, welcome back, I should say.
Yeah, you
joined me, boy, it was a day or two after the explosion of the Deepwater Horizon rig out there in the Gulf before I think we all fully understood just how terrible a disaster we were looking at.
Seems like a long time ago.
It does, doesn't it? And it hasn't stopped, and it's unbelievable. And I think we talked about, we may have talked about it back then, that, you know, this seemed like the perfect opportunity for Democrats to make their case to finally get this bill passed in the Senate. It's been lingering. It's already passed in the House, but the Senate is still the holdup. So before we get to the politics of where this legislation stands, David Roberts, can we talk, can you explain in human being language what is cap and trade? Because I think a lot of people hear that, and there's a lot of disinformation going on out there. So can you explain it the way a human could possibly understand it?
Well, I can certainly attempt such a feat.
Good luck to you.
I mean, you need to keep the two parts distinct. The first part is the cap, and that's, from an environmental point of view, the important part, which is to say we want to cap the amount of greenhouse gas emissions in the total U.S. economy and then slowly ratchet that cap down. That's the environmental piece.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is to reduce emissions by 80% from 2005 levels by 2050. That's what's in most of the bills in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
When you cap that amount of greenhouse gases allowed, you break that amount up into chunks, and those are called allowances. So everybody who's out there emitting those greenhouse gases gets allowances for the amount of greenhouse gases they emit.
Mm-hmm.
And so as the cap reduces, they get fewer and fewer allowances. So what they need to do is either reduce their emissions or start buying more allowances from other people who are reducing their emissions. And that's where the trading comes in. So you get basically a market in greenhouse gas reductions. Greenhouse gas reductions become a valuable commodity that you can buy and sell.
It's a market-based solution, really, and of the two that have really been put forward, either cap and trade or just an out-and-out tax on carbon. And, you know, don't be fooled when you hear the wingnuts call this a cap and tax. It ain't. It's cap and trade. So before we go to the break, and then we'll come back and talk about the how cap and trade is just a huge scam, David Roberts, explain to me, when did the conservatives, the so-called conservatives, decide that they don't like cap and trade? Because didn't they used to be in favor of cap and trade for other similar greenhouse gases?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, the background here is in the 70s and 80s, the favored environmental regulatory technique was just to go to a plant or a facility or a factory and say, you can emit X amount of this, you have to put X amount of cleaning technology on and clean up X amount, just really what are called command and control regulations, just sort of telling individuals what they have to do.
Out-and-out regulation is what
right.
we used to do.
And
okay.
So this, and so cap and trade originally came out around SO2, the ozone-destroying SO2, and the idea was, instead of us telling individual plants what they have to do, let's just set a total limit, and then let them figure out the best, fastest way to reduce, so they can either reduce or trade or add new technology or get more efficient, whatever they want to do. So George Bush's father, Bush 1, implemented cap and trade in 1990 around SO2, and it was considered a conservative idea back then. And when did conservatives turn against it? When Democrats adopted it. I mean, it's that simple.
It is indeed. More simple explanations for you with David Roberts of grist.org after this short break. I'm Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. You can give us a call, 877-520-1150, if you want to get your point in. Much more right after this.
Rewrite the star, electric car, so good so far. Electric car on verdant green, invent a turn, invent a dream. Electric.
There's one set of facts we just discussed.
Yes, please be the new machine. Please. Yes, please. Oh, I cannot wait for my electric car. Should be here any moment. And we can, save the world in the bargain. Sounds good to me. Today, the CBO came out with their report. The Congressional Budget Office came out with their report on the Kerry Lieberman climate bill and found that it will cut the deficit by $19 billion. Well, sounds like another reason for the Republicans to be against it. We are speaking with David Roberts of Grist, grist.org. You can follow him on Twitter, and I recommend it, at drgrist. And you can call us at 877-520-1150, because guess what, guys? We're about to talk about cap and trade and what a scam it is and how it's all meant to make Al Gore rich. And I don't know, the Jews are probably behind it too. Anyway, hey, David, so the conservatives, so-called conservatives, used to like cap and trade as a solution, as a market-based solution to these issues, but not so much anymore now that the Democrats also seem to be embracing these ideas.
Well, let's clarify something. Back when George Bush's dad was president,
right,
Republicans still included some people who were genuine philosophical pro-market small government conservatives. And from that perspective, cap and trade makes perfect sense. But the Republican Party has devolved into basically the one core position that they all share now is they're opposed to raising revenue by any means. Call it a tax, call it whatever you want. They're just opposed to raising revenue. And this is another way to look at cap and trade is you have all these energy programs you want to implement. You want to incentivize electric cars. You want to build nuclear plants. You want to build wind turbines, whatever you want. All that stuff costs money. The cap and trade program is how you raise that money to spend on all the goodies you want. And Republicans are just opposed to raising money. That's it. They want to cut taxes. They don't want to raise money. That's what they've come to.
Well, and now in this case, you got the Congressional Budget Office saying it's going to cut the deficit by $19
billion. Exactly. It raises more revenue than it spends.
Do the Republicans have an alternative? We know they're against the carbon tax. We know they're against the cap and trade. And by the way, Desi Doyen puts on my call screener here. She says that it should be called the Make Polluters Pay to Pollute Act.
Yeah, it could have been better branded a long time ago.
Yeah, well, you know, it's Democrats. What do you expect? Well, but do the Republicans actually have something legitimate that they would agree to at this point?
Well, look, I mean, Republicans have a lot of things they would agree to spend money on. They love to spend money just as much as any politician in Washington does. They want to spend a bunch of money on nuclear plants. They want to spend a bunch of money on electric cars. They just don't want to raise the money. They're not they call themselves fiscal conservatives,
yeah.
But there's nothing conservative about this. They want to spend money.
Yep.
They just don't want to raise the money. That's all there is to it.
All right, let me go to a caller. We'll take your calls at 877-520-1150. If you have a question for David Roberts concerning clean energy legislation, cap and trade legislation, or the Make Polluters Pay to Pollute Act, as Desi has now dubbed it, if you have a question, give us a shout. I've got a question about cap and trade, but maybe Hache here in North Carolina has the question I was going to ask. Essentially, and I'll let him ask his, but what I'm curious about is setting aside the wingnuts, setting aside the folks on the right who are just going to say anything they can to block Democrats, and now all of a sudden they're against cap and trade. There are some people who would consider themselves progressive, I suspect, who actually think cap and trade is a scam meant to line the pockets of Al Gore. But before I let you respond, let me see if that's what Hache's thinking is here. Hache, welcome to Mike Malloy program.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, first of all, conservatives say they're to the right of Attila the Hun, I am to the left of Mark Twain.
Okay.
So I'm not approaching you as an adversary here, but I'm thinking that cap and trade, as the gentleman just explained it, and as I understood what it was before, but it turns carbon into an investment opportunity, it seems to me. And that's great for people who value money more than, having a planet to spend it on. Because when I listen to scientists about this, they're talking about by the end of the century, this planet will not have ice caps. And I don't see how you stop that by creating a system that makes carbon profitable for anybody. I'm not an anti-Al Gore. I like Al Gore a lot.
So what are you getting at? What is your question or thought here?
Well, the problem that I see with it is that it completely really ignores the idea that we need to somehow shun carbon rather than turning pollution into really investment opportunities for big companies.
Okay, hang on, Hache. Let me put this in the form of a question, David Roberts. Does this cap and trade bill, even if it were to pass, and I know they don't like to call it cap and trade anymore in the Senate, does it just prolong the use of greenhouse gases, the use of carbon? Does it not actually limit these gases, as Hache says, is the problem here?
I'd say two things in response to that. First, what Hache is getting wrong is that it doesn't make carbon an investment opportunity. It makes carbon reduction an investment opportunity. And so there you're harnessing this people's desire for money, which is, whether you approve of it or not, a powerful force. You're harnessing that behind carbon reduction. So that's what you get. It's when you reduce carbon that you can make money on it. That's the whole point. You harness the profit motive behind reducing carbon. Now, that said, none of the cap and trade bills that are on the table now are gonna do the job, are gonna reduce emissions as much as scientists say they need to be reduced. But that's not that's not a problem with the structure of the policy. That's just a problem with the political courage of American leaders. I mean, you got to remember the cap is the important environmental part. The cap is set and ratchets down. That's the key environmental part. So you can set the cap at whatever level you want. Right now it's set at an inadequate level, but you know, braver leaders later on down the road can ramp up that cap to something stronger.
Ramp it up or ratchet it down, in
ratchet
fact,
it down,
right?
As it may be.
Does it ever ratchet down to, so is it ever set to ratchet down below the levels that scientists say it needs to be, even eventually?
Well, right now it's set for 80% reduction by 2050, which is on the one hand inadequate based on the latest science, but on the other hand, that is a huge revolution in the American economy. I mean, you really can't understate the size of the task we're talking about here. So it's incredibly ambitious.
Okay.
Environmentalist complaints are more around the short-term targets. Environmentalists want to get started faster and ramp up quicker. And of course, you know, there's lots of vested interests in the U.S. that want to slow walk this thing as long as they can.
Hache, does that answer your question or concern here?
Not particularly, but I mean, for instance, how do you stop a giant company from simply trading with its subsidiary, from setting up a kind of a shell of a company and, you know, pretending to trade carbon offsets that way?
Well, the point is, the trading, I mean, lots of people have concerns about the integrity of the carbon trading market, and those are perfectly legitimate concerns, but they're economic concerns. They're not environmental concerns. The environmental work is done by the cap. There's going to be fewer and fewer of these allowances available. So no matter how people are trading them or moving them around or playing shell games with them, the fact that underlying all that is that there's fewer and fewer of them available as the cap declines. So you have to keep the environmental concerns and the economic concerns separate. Those economic concerns are real concerns, and they're legitimate concerns, but the cap is what's doing the environmental work.
Got it, Hache?
Got it.
Thank you, brother. I do appreciate your call. Excuse me. 877-520-1150. And of course, Hache wasn't the call that I was hoping for. What I want to hear from... And you know what I'm talking about, right? I want to hear from the Alex Jones fans out there. You know, the folks that have figured out, who have gotten broken away, scraped away the veneer to realize the grifters behind this entire scam and how it's Al Gore and Rahm Emanuel who have been, preparing to line their pockets. In lieu of someone calling and having the courage to ask that question, we have other questions, but that's the one that I want to know. I'll just go ahead and ask you, what do you say to those folks who present you with that, with the whole, it's a huge scam thing? And then that's setting aside the greenhouse gases and those concerns, but just the whole cap and trade scheme.
Well, imagine, if you will, that you are an ex-vice president, an ex-presidential candidate with access to virtually every famous person and every rich person on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And you're thinking, how could I get rich fast? What's the fastest point from A to B? I know. I'm going to engineer a global scientific conspiracy. Then I'm going to engineer an incredibly difficult to pass policy. And when it finally passes, then I'm going to get involved in a company that's going to take part in the market created by that policy. I know these people have a low opinion of Al Gore, but surely, no matter what you think of him, he could think of easier ways to get rich than that.
Well, you're right. Let's see if, Gene has a question from San Francisco. Gene, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Oh, do I have her? Oh, I can't get her because there we go. Gene, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hi, Brad and guest. I'm looking at an article.
It's not just guest. It's David Roberts from Grist.
Mr. David Roberts.
Yes.
I'm looking at a Delta Farm Press article that says the carbon market is in disarray, that the farmers are only getting 10 cents on a dollar return, that they planted trees as they've been told that it would work. They're going into no-till farming, but they're losing money. It doesn't look like any more farmers are going to do this if it doesn't work.
Thanks, Gene.
Well, we need to keep a couple of things distinct here. There's a carbon market that would be created by a cap-and-trade system, and that would be trade in government-issued allowances. There's also already existing right now this separate market in voluntary carbon reductions, and this is the carbon offset market. These are the sort of offsets you can buy when you, you know, fly somewhere or or buy a TerraPass sticker for your car or whatever. There's a fairly healthy trade market in the U.S. for these voluntary carbon credits, and that market is still young, so there's still a lot of people trying to figure out what are the standards, what kind of projects qualify, how much do they qualify, what are the sort of quality control mechanisms, and there's inevitably a lot of fumbling about, and nowhere is it fuzzier than when it comes to agriculture, because as you can imagine, you can say, well, I can reduce carbon by X amount by planting a bunch of trees, even though the carbon won't actually be reduced for whatever 50 years until the trees grow up. It gets hard to measure those things, and so there's been a lot of confusion and fumbling around, and there's just a lot of confusion because they don't know if the U.S. is going to pass a cap and trade bill, which would at that point sort of swallow that market into the larger market. So it's just a young, immature market, and there's going to be lots of flailing around and probably lots of shenanigans at the beginning until there are some set rules of the road.
David Roberts joins us from grist.org. We'll be back with much more and your calls at 877-520-1150. It looks like we've got some cap and trade opposers on the line. We'll get to that and the status of climate change legislation. Will it ever pass? Brad on Malloy. You can't see the forest for the trees. Cover up your lives with sympathy. Tide is high indeed, and getting higher, I'm afraid. We are speaking with David Roberts of grist.org. Check him out at grist.org, of course, and also via the Twitters at Dr. Grist, or as we like to call him, Dr. Grist. I got a couple of callers who are post cap and trade, but I'm going to get to all you guys there, but very quickly. You are our go-to guy on where the hell this clean legislation is. Harry Reid recently said, sorta, kinda, that he was going to get this back on the table, maybe on the floor of the Senate. What's the status at this point, David Roberts?
Well, the status is there are a bunch of bills that have been put forward by various senators. One of them is the one from Kerry and Lieberman, the main one everybody knows. There's one from Cantwell and Collins. There's energy bills from Bingaman, Merkley. There's a bunch of bills out there. So what Reid is going to do is huddle with his advisors, maybe some committee chairmen, and figure out some sort of floor strategy and cobble together a bill from pieces of all those legislation. And the big question, of course, is whether a price on carbon is going to make it to the final bill, and honestly, it looks like probably not. So we may be having this argument for no reason.
Really? So we're looking at there'll be a renewable energy and all that stuff. But
yeah, there'll be some renewable energy incentives. There'll be some incentives for nuclear. There'll be some efficiency stuff, some electric car stuff. And then I think what will happen is the price on carbon, some sort of cap-and-trade system, maybe a limited cap-and-trade system only for electric utilities, will be an amendment that will come up for a separate vote. Because everybody in the Senate wants a vote specifically on that. And so the question is whether that piece can get to 60. Some bill will pass. Some energy bill will pass. The question is whether it will also be a climate bill.
And just how much it's going to have for nuclear energy, how much it's going to have for offshore drilling. Are you hearing that they're still going to move forward with offshore drilling?
Well, they're all still in love with nuclear. I think they're going to steer clear of the offshore drilling now, since the core of the bill really is going to be measures involving addressing BP and offshore drilling safety and all stuff like that. So I really don't think they're going to go gung-ho on more offshore drilling. I think it's mostly going to be standards and things like that around offshore drilling.
Yeah, and you know what really just pisses me off, Dave, is that everybody here, you know, they're now saying, well, we have to be careful about offshore drilling because, as we have now learned, we don't know how to clean it up in the worst-case scenario. But the, but so let's do nuclear instead. I mean,
you think we learned a lesson about risk?
Yes.
Take different risks.
It's insane. I know. We, you know, if nuke goes wrong, we obviously we don't know how to clean that up. What the hell are we thinking here?
Well,
what are these people thinking?
There's also a lesson here about climate change. I mean, what if climate change is worse than we think? We flip over some tipping point. There's no going back. I mean, the oil spill should be a lesson about risk, things that can't be undone.
Right.
How much of a risk do you want to run? To risk something that you can't undo if you do it.
Because as actually Des types in here onto my screen her question, you know, will the bill be enough to save our asses from climate change? You know, I guess unless you don't think it exists, so it doesn't matter. But, you know, well, this bill won't even address that by the time he cobbles it together, correct?
It's unlikely to substantially reduce emissions, yes.
David, I leave it to you. If you want to hang over, I do have these callers here. I wasn't able to get to them. I will take the calls no matter what. But, David, you want to stick around,
sure,
for the quick questions? And then on anything you want to talk about above and beyond this, anything you want to talk about in the day's news or your opinion, it is your media. Use it or lose it. 877-520-1150. David Roberts from grist.org sticks with us for one more segment and a couple of your calls. Anything else you want to get in on, do it now. These are your public airwaves for now anyway. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Be back in a sec. Minutes after the hour, Brad Friedman, friendly, very friendly citizen, investigative journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker, drafted into duty here tonight and all week long, being the broadcast media here in Mike Malloy's stead as he's enjoying his summer staycation. By the way, some great pictures over at MikeMalloy.com of little Molly, who is really growing up, frankly. We were out with the Malloys a couple of years ago out there in Atlanta when it was Mike's birthday. I can't remember what birthday it was, frankly. But and Molly was just a wee little thing, but now she's growing up, and she was parading in all her patriotic garb at a July 4th parade out there. If you want to check out those photos, she's darling, and they will be back next Monday. You got me until then. Get over it. David Roberts from grist.org has been kind enough to join us for just a few more minutes here to answer some of your questions as they're coming in on 877-520-1150. In this case, concerning clean energy legislation and cap and trade, looking for some skeptics out there. Apparently, you know, they have no trouble finding my email box, but apparently they have trouble dialing the phone. We do have a couple of folks, and one of them that came in via my Twitter account here. And if you're not following me, shame on you. I can be followed at the Brad Blog. This comes from Art Levine, who is actually a great reporter out there in D.C. He points out that Goldman Sachs is profiting from cap and trade, and therefore, I guess the implication being it's a bad thing. Let's get what's your thoughts on that, David Roberts?
Well, I mean, you know, Goldman Sachs profits from a lot of commodity trading markets. You know, we trade oil, we trade wheat, mm-hmm. trade steel. Goldman Sachs profits from all those, or do we just want to eliminate commodity markets? I mean, honestly, that particular objection to cap and trade, the sort of this notion that it's a sop to bankers mm-hmm. has always struck me as a little bit more slogan than any sort of considered objection. I mean, you create a market, yes, there's going to be market middlemen doing the deal, making mm-hmm. Contracts and all these other financial tools that we use routinely in other markets, and yeah, those people will get a cut of the action like they do with any commodity market.
You're far too sensible. I tend to agree with you. And by the way, folks, you do want to call. We will take your calls on any damn thing you want to talk about after this segment, so get in now if you want. 877-520-1150 as the lines are filling up. 877-520-1150. All right, let's see if Anand's objection to cap and trade makes any more sense. Nan calling from my old hometown of St. Louis. Hey, Nan, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hi, Brad, my favorite troublemaker.
Thank you.
Hey, first of all, I just have a statement in the form of a question about something that your guest said earlier, which what my statement is, when has a remedy that implemented the free market ideology ever resulted in a net benefit for the average American? I don't expect an answer. I've just been saying that.
Well, let's try to get you one, Nan. You got an answer for that, David?
Sure. The 1990 Clean Air Act amendments that set up a market-based trading program for SO2 produced much larger reductions in SO2 for much less money than anyone expected, and it was because of the market flexibility built into the program.
Boom goes the dynamite.
Let me ask you about this.
Yeah.
Are you talking about cap and trade that is strictly 100% domestic, or are you talking about a global cap and trade system?
Well,
because I have no problem with it if it's domestic. If it's a global cap and trade, I am diametrically opposed to that.
Well,
for one reason.
Go ahead. What's your reason?
The clean development mechanism of the World Bank, which is wreaking havoc all over the developing world through cap and trade, which is it was supposed to reduce global poverty and increase environmental degradation down, and it is having exactly the opposite effect. And what's happening is multinational corporations are exploiting not only the indigenous people of these nations, and it's lethal to them. It is devastating to the environment.
Let me get a response here, and I'll just toss this in that, you know, in this case, when we're talking about cap and trade legislation, we're talking only for the moment about what can be done in our Congress. I don't think the discussion is about what to do across the world, although the world is looking at us and waiting for us, you know, the greatest use of carbon in the world.
But it's already in existence. It's been in existence since Kyoto.
All right, let me get David's thoughts. David?
Nan has perfectly legitimate concerns about the clean development mechanism, which is we should keep these things distinct, not the same thing as a cap and trade program. Now, it does matter because the domestic cap and trade program that would be established by this bill would allow for some what are called international offsets, mm-hmm. which is carbon reductions in other countries that you can then buy and sell as allowances here. And some of those might come from the clean development mechanism. So it is a legitimate concern. There's a lot of reform going on at the CDM right now. There's lots of widely acknowledged problems with it, and there's lots of reform being done. But I think Nan's skepticism about the clean development mechanism is perfectly appropriate, and the more people who have a skeptical eye on it, the better. The better the reform will go.
How does that work for you, Nan?
Great, because I think the mainstream media is ignoring it just as the World Bank is. And it's really, it's turning out to be a devastating program through the World Bank. And let me direct you to Censored 2010, Article Number 15, which is all about the global cap and trade fiasco.
And that has...
I'm for a carbon tax, absolutely a carbon tax. But a global cap and trade... pretty much does nothing to incentivize reducing emissions or going towards clean energy.
All right. I appreciate that, Nan. And that Censored 2010, you're referring to the book or to their Project Censored Awards for 2010?
It's the book.
The book.
For 2010, article number 15.
All right. And while folks are going there and going and getting that important book, make sure when you do get it, you read the chapter that I wrote for it. Thanks, Nan. I appreciate,
I appreciate
your call.
And actually, yeah? I think it's online. All these articles are online.
Oh, okay. I appreciate that, Nan. Thanks.
Uh-huh.
We'll see you in St. Louis, hopefully sometime soon. All right. Bye. Okay. Let me get one more call here in for David Roberts. Maybe two. Wait a minute. Let me see. We use the phones. There we go. Richard from Oakland, California. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hey, I listen to you guys all the time, and you help our sanity in the country because so many people listen to those other crazy people.
Stop moving, Richard. Your phone is falling apart on us.
What? I'm not moving.
Okay, go ahead. Try it again.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, it sounds better. Go ahead.
Okay. Let's say the cap is 10 and somebody else is, you know, really more concerned about the environment for whatever reason, and they reduce their stuff to 6.
Right.
Somebody else who's done 16 can then buy that other stuff from those other people, and we end up with both having 10 instead of one having 10 and one having 6, which means we're not going to get as much reduction as we need, because the latest report today that came out that I heard says that, you know, we're going to go up 7 degrees Fahrenheit in the next 100 years, which will destroy the world. This is the latest study that just came out that I heard on the news today. We have to really take this seriously. We can't have these little games where companies can, you know, buy the ability to pollute more.
So you're suggesting the cap and trade will lead to more pollution, not less, Richard?
No, don't play with me with that kind of stuff. That's what you did with the other guy. You're not dealing with the reality.
No, I'm asking. I'm trying to understand your question, Richard.
I think I understand Richard's objection.
Okay.
I know. I've listened to you for an hour now. Cap and trade is the equivalent, if you want to make a parallel, cap and trade is like true environmental stuff, as is the current health bill we got compared to a single-payer health plan. Okay,
let me get David's answer to your question.
It's not going to solve the problem.
Richard, let me get Richard, settle down. Let me get a response from David. David, go ahead.
Well, I think it's actually a decent analogy to the health bill in that it would not do what we need ultimately, but would be a hell of a lot better than the status quo. But let me respond to Richard's objection, because it's actually a pretty sophisticated and interesting objection that a lot of people inside the environmental movement are debating this. So if you cap things and reduce the cap down, you know, whatever, 50% reductions, you're going to get 50% reductions. So It's just not true that cap and trade is not going to reduce pollution. It's going to reduce pollution however much the cap says. But say that you're a particularly ambitious state or city or company or whatever, and you want to go beyond those reductions. You want to be more ambitious than the national system. It really is true that, say, California companies reduce their emissions more than is required by the system, they free up allowances so that someone else can emit more. So the thing is, you get the reductions you set with the cap, but what you can't do under the system is exceed the cap. You can't do better than the cap. So it is, in a sense, a limit on our ambition. You can meet the cap, but you can't exceed it. So I think there are ways to tweak the system if you're, you know, if you happen to be God and in control of the system and not the horrendous U.S. Congress, there are ways to tweak the system to handle that problem. But it really is true. It's ambitious, but it's also, in a sense, a limit on our ambition. We can't go beyond the cap.
Richard, does that answer your thought?
And then that's the problem. Unfortunately, some people are going to get to be able to pollute more than others because, you know, they have the money to buy the pollution credits. And that's not the way we have to look at this, because we're all in this together. We're all, you know, as they say, you know, you hang separately, you hang together. The world, when the world goes out, I don't care if you're Bill Gates with $85 billion, you're dead.
Okay, I got to get out, Richard.
I have kids, you have kids, Pope, and I want them to have a safe world.
I appreciate your thought, Richard. I got to run here. Thank you, sir, for the call. All right. It seems to me, David Roberts, we got to start somewhere. Well,
the idea, no environmentalist thinks that the cap and trade bills that are on the table now are sufficient to solve the problem. Richard's absolutely right about that. But the question is, 10 years from now, when we've been hit by more floods and more heat waves, and there's more people involved in the clean energy industry, and you have a better political situation, what's easier, passing a brand new system or strengthening a system that you already have in place? So the idea here is get the system in place, and then every subsequent battle becomes a little bit easier because you've already got something to build off of.
David Roberts from grist.org, thanks for that extra time here tonight. Greatly appreciated, and I hope you'll join us again in the future as this moves forward. Thank you,
all
brother.
Right, thanks a lot, Brad.
All right, your calls, much more right after this on The Malloy Show.
Who do you love?
Welcome back to the Malloy Program. 877-520-1150, your calls straight ahead for the rest of the hour. Tomorrow night, Howie Klein will be joining us from Down with Tyranny to talk about Dem Blue Dogs and the elections that we got coming up and all that political stuff that I don't even have time to look at. So I'm glad Howie's doing it for us. He's going to be in live in studio here in Los Angeles, broadcasting along with me. We'll call it Hanging with Howie. Also, some breaking news tomorrow night concerning a long-waged battle over election fraud in a particular county and a particular state, and some startling new news. Quite troubling. Anyway, we'll be covering that tomorrow on The Malloy Show. And then on Friday, some guy who thinks I'm full of it concerning electronic voting machines, he canceled his Mike Malloy Show podcast subscription because he's so mad that I sit in and talk about these things. He's in favor of electronic voting, apparently, and so I decided I thought I would invite him on. We're going to find out why he thinks I'm full of it and what's so good about e-voting. He's in favor of it, and if you feel differently, I might suggest you sign up for the podcast subscription over at MikeMalloy.com. Let him know for every one he loses when he has me in that we can fill him up with 10 more. It does go to support this program, and it's greatly needed. And at the same time, by the way, when I'm hosting, I go ahead and post the archives for free at bradblog.com. As we will tonight, if you missed any portion of tonight's program, you'll be able to get it late night tonight after I have me some dinner. All right. Do I have time for this? I don't know if I do or not. So I'm going to get to a bunch of your calls after the break. 877-520-1150. I know a lot of you are hanging on the line. Hawaiian governor vetoed same-sex civil unions bill today out there in Hawaii. I'm not going to have time to cover this as I wanted to, but I will say that, you know, it's not all bad. For one, it was a same-sex civil unions bill, and I see no reason why gay folks should have to settle for second best civil unions. Get married if you want to get married. And if you're a conservative like I am, you don't think the government should get in the way of what people want to do in their private business. And you believe in the Constitution, which demands equal rights for all Americans. That means if you'd like to marry a same-sex partner, it's fine by me. The governor vetoed it in Hawaii, Republican governor. She gave some lame reasons, but you know what? All the civil rights fights take years. This one will too, but the good guys are winning. Brad, for Malloy, more after this.
When the tears begin to roll, 'cause the world out there waits.
get it, T-Man. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Yeah, there we go. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com in for Malloy. Got a whole bunch of phones here, a whole bunch of phone lines all filled up. I'm going to try to get to as many as I can. Just want to do a quick update here. Alan McDuffie is reporting over at rawstory.com, a story that we covered a couple of nights ago. This activist who was facing potentially 3 years in jail for having unfurled a banner which said "Green Jobs Now" inside the U.S. Senate. Was facing 3 years from the Obama administration, who was unbelievably asking for them to triple the normal punishment here. The judge, the environmentalist was Ted Glick. The judge has refused to jail him. Judge Frederick H. Weisberg has instead given him a sentence of 40 hours of community service and $1,100 in fines. And he said that the big turnout at the courtroom yesterday in D.C. Made a difference, as did all the letters that Judge Weisberg received. So good going, peeps. Thanks for speaking out and raising hell and holding everyone's feet to the fire, including the Obama administration. Okay, let's get to your calls. Lou in Spokane. Is it Spokane? 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 Washington, welcome to the Mike Mull. Spokane?
Well, it's both. 100 years ago it was Spokane, now it's Spokane.
Okay, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show from Spokane, Washington. Lou, what's up?
Hey, Brad.
Hey.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
What is the number one greenhouse gas?
Well, let me refer to Desi on this and see if she has an answer. Oh, Des, can you? We got a caller wants to know the number one greenhouse gas. Do you have? Can you pot her up?
What? I'm sorry. What?
The caller wants to know what is the number one greenhouse gas. Desi Doyen, ladies and gentlemen, my co-host on the Green News Report. Yes, dear.
Number one. There is actually quite a few. So.
Number one in best, Lou. Most. What are you looking for?
Well, let's start out with volume.
Volume.
Oh, Des? You mean as far as CO2 being a trace gas? Yeah, I mean, it's a trace gas.
My question is this: What is the number one greenhouse gas in terms of volume?
What are you getting? Well, I don't know. Do you know the right answer?
I don't know the number.
All right, what's your answer, Lou?
Volume. I know that CO2 is a trace gas along with all the other gases. But...
Ow, your phone stinks, Lou. Okay, tell us what your point is here.
Well, here's two of you. You're talking on the radio about greenhouse gases, and you don't know what's the most important greenhouse gas is.
Well, what's the most important? Or what's
it is water vapor.
What you're saying. No, the problem with water vapor is that, yes, it is more dominant as far as its actual, particulate in the atmosphere.
Volume,
but water vapor, and as far as volume, goes away after 5 or 7 years, but CO2 stays in the atmosphere for thousands of years.
No, water vapor never goes away.
Okay.
What it does is evaporates from the ocean, it comes down as rain, and this cycle has been going on.
Yes, it cycles through. That's what they were trying to say when they say it doesn't hang out like CO2 does. CO2 doesn't cycle through.
Okay, what's the proportion of water vapor to CO2?
Let's see. Let me look this up.
What are you getting at here, Lou? Because we've got a lot of callers.
I'm getting at
getting
at the science of water vapor, okay?
Yeah, what about it?
Okay, water vapor comprises 95% of the greenhouse gases. This is from U.S. government report. CO2, most of which is not human created. Humans only been creating in the last 100 years. There was about, 1,200% more.
I got a lot of callers, Lou. Are you a climate change denier? Is that basically what's going on?
No, it's not denier.
What
if,
is it?
If you two will go back and get the report from the U.S. government on greenhouse gases, you will learn an awful lot. And what you will learn is this is a multi-trillion-dollar fraud.
Okay.
I see. Well, you know, you could also go look up the recent report from the U.S. Global Climate Change Research Program that is also from the U.S. government.
From global climate change.
Why?
You want to look up an actual report.
What's wrong with
that? That is an actual report.
Lou, what's wrong with the IPCC report?
It's totally political.
No, it's not.
Nope. You're wrong.
The IPCC IPCC has been proven to be a fraud.
Wrong.
Well, it hasn't. It was just actually exonerated by several academic panels. But, you know,
yes.
Just whatever you do, don't listen to all of the scientific organizations in the world who, without exception, except for the American Association of Petroleum Geologists, have signed on to the concept that humans are forcing the climate, human activities are forcing climate change. Every single major organization of scientific nature in the world has signed on to this. So if you find somebody who's an actual legitimate major scientific research organization that does not sign on to it, that would be news. Otherwise, if you think you know more than the scientists do, gosh, you really should present your papers to them.
Well, are you saying that Fox and Friends does not count as an actual science organization?
I'm saying that the brain trust of Fox and Friends does not actually have any scientific training, and they're not qualified to evaluate the research.
Thank you, Des. Smartly done. And let it be known that Lou hung up on himself.
Yes, he did.
I was
and also,
happy to
you
let
know,
him,
and let me just say real quick for anybody who is interested in finding out what the science actually says and also debunking the many, many, many zombie denier and skeptical arguments that are out there, go to skepticalscience.com. It's run by an actual scientist with actual explanations that can, they're very accessible, that gives you the links to all these studies that Ralph says he cares about, that will actually describe what is going on, what the science says, what it doesn't say, the actual state of the science today. Skepticalscience.com.
Science. You're overlooking the fact that Steve Doocy was a weatherman.
Oh, that's a whole other thing right there.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you, Des. Smartly done. Let's get to some more calls here, some more people who don't like us. AC in St. Petersburg. I presume that's St. Petersburg, Florida versus Russia, AC?
Correct.
All right. What's up, sir? Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
I'm terribly upset because now it's going all over the Internet that Lockbox Al Gore wants to have a new special tax. Global warming tax
brother.
Listen.
What?
May I please?
Yes, go ahead. I'm going to have to get Desi back in here for you. Go ahead.
Okay, he wants to have a new global warming tax, brand new.
He does?
For massage therapists because they contribute too much to global warming.
All right. Thank you, AC. You could have used your time on the air better than that. See ya. All right, that's too bad. He would have been... you know, it looked like he had something good to say, but he was just making stuff up. Let's see who we can get, who doesn't suck here. For Ray, there we go. Ray in Davenport, Iowa. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. What's up?
Oh, Brad.
Hey.
I was kind of wondering, I kind of have an idea here that electronic voting machines might be viable, but what I see right now is the problem that the results are determined or qualified by a person. What if you were to use a second computer to check the votes from the first computer?
Well, see,
this is my idea. You vote on the regular system is you go in and you vote.
Mm-hmm.
I contend that you should print out a ticket that the person who voted on looks at and verifies that his votes are correct.
Mm-hmm.
Then he puts that into a second system or a box that is ran through a second system, and you compare them.
Okay, so your solution, and I'm only cutting you off because I want to get to all the callers here, Ray.
Sure.
So your solution to the bad e-voting computers that we have now is to double them.
No, that's what it sounds like on the surface, but in reality is a normal vote takes minutes.
Yeah.
To do a check takes seconds.
Well, the other thing I'll respond to you, Ray, here, and I really don't mean to give you short shrift. I just do want to get
to
as many folks as I can. The other problem here is when you talk about printing out the vote and then printing out the ballot and then running it through another machine, most people, as a Caltech MIT study showed, don't check their so-called computer-printed paper trails. 80% of them don't check it. And another study from Rice University found that of those who do check the summary at the end of the voting process, two-thirds of them don't notice when their votes have been flipped by the computer. So if we want to finish an election and know that it has been counted as per the voter's intent and know that we're looking at the voter's intent, then nothing beats a hand-marked paper ballot, Ray.
Could be, but I have one question then. If nobody knows if their vote was correct when they handed it in or didn't, then how do they know if it was wrong all along?
Well, look, if they make the mistake, that's their problem. If they fill in the wrong bubble, that's their problem. I don't mind that. I don't want the computer flipping it on them, though, and they don't know. Okay?
No, it sounds like people need to change.
Yeah, well, the people are fine, and that's why it's not an issue of voting integrity. It's an issue of election integrity. We, the people, need to be able to oversee what we do. I got to run, Ray. Thanks.
All right, thanks.
All right, bye-bye. Rich, truth is all. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. I didn't give you nearly enough time last night. I'm going to not give you nearly enough time tonight either, but at least I'll give you a little bit more. Welcome to the show, Rich.
Thank you. Proving election fraud by Richard Shannon. I'd just like to give a few quick bullet points, very important things people should be aware of.
Go.
The corporate and mainstream media never considers that the exit polls are correct, and they always assume that the recorded vote is correct.
Right. They believe the reported vote from the machines, that's the golden poll as far as they're concerned. The exit polls are going to be wrong. Yes, point number two.
Let me just go through some quick bullets. 80 million uncounted votes since 1968.
What do you mean uncounted, Rich?
80 million votes were never counted since 1968.
Well, what do you mean not counted?
In presidential elections.
What do you mean by not counted?
They were never counted. They were either absentee, spoiled ballots.
Well,
they never counted.
They count absentee ballots.
Well, no, but if you check the census, 1988, there were 10.6 million net uncounted votes. In other words, if you look at votes cast, subtract votes recorded, votes cast from the census, minus votes recorded, you get the net uncounted votes. And although that number has been decreasing, now the fraud takes place on voting machines.
Right.
Let me just continue with a couple of quick points.
I got to get to a break, so let me do this, Rich. Can you give folks information where they can go to get your book, Proving Election Fraud? I think Proving Election Fraud, right?
Yeah, Proving Election Fraud on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble, online.
Okay.
They can buy it.
And they
it
can
goes
get
through,
more
I'm sorry?
And they can get more information at Richard Shannon.
RichardShannon.com.
CHRNIN.com. Richard, folks know you as Truth Is All from Democratic Underground and comments and so forth at Brad Blog. I don't always agree with what you have to report, but God love you. God bless you for keeping an eye on what's been going on in this country and trying to document it as fastidiously as you have.
The mainstream media does not produce the correct numbers on either the pre-election or the final exit polls. That is a perpetuation of fraud from one election to the next. One quick point. Obama won by 22 million votes, but he was only recorded to have won by 9.5 million. John Kerry won by 10 million votes, but he was recorded to have lost by 3 million. A 13 million discrepancy due to election fraud.
Find out more about it, RichardShannon.com, Proving Election Fraud. Thanks for all you do, Rich. Appreciate it. Truth is all.
Okay, thank you.
All right, back with the rest of your calls. Right after this, Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy for one more segment, Howie Klein tomorrow night, and some breaking news.
Don't fight it, baby, feel it. Ha. Oh, baby, when you're dancing near me, with your cheek close to mine, and you begin to feel a funny thrill.
Say it's only a paper moon, sailing over a cardboard sea. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me.
All right, welcome back to our last segment tonight on the Mike Malloy Show. My thanks go out to my guests tonight, David Roberts of Grist.org and L.A. County Registrar of Voters, Dean Logan.
If you believed in me.
Also, my thanks to Tony Sorrentino here at LA's K-Talk AM 1150, engineering for us tonight, choosing some of the finest music you'll hear on the radio. Producer Desi Doyen and screener of the calls and monitor of the bradblog.com chat room. Thank you, Desi, for triple duty and your on-air personality there tonight handling the Wingnuts. Also, Jeannie Dean at the bradblog.com. Thank you, chat room. My thanks to you. And, of course, my always greatest thanks to Mike and Kathy Malloy for entrusting me with this microphone. Silly them. If you're listening on the Mike Malloy .on via MikeMalloy.com, please stay tuned tonight for Head On with Bob Kincaid, as always. All right, let me get to a couple more calls, and please, please make your comments fast so we can get in as many as we can. Nora in Minneapolis. What's up, Nora?
Hey there, Brad. Called to let you know our Senator Al Franken has been in for 1 year as senator today.
Oh, is that right?
And not only that, if you thought the election was over, Hubbard Broadcasting is telling us that they do not believe it is, and they have a suit against Ramsey County. I don't know if you remember, they recounted the votes by hand for 8 months, but there was a bunch of, what do you call it, rejected absentee ballots.
Yeah.
And they are suing to have the rejected absentee ballots that are hundreds in Ramsey County. And since then, luckily, our Secretary of State has done a lot to speed up and fix. It was a great way to find out how our inefficiency or not good. And now they're going to have, like, in one place where they do all the absentee ballots, and they do count them ahead of time rather than wait and vote them.
So, Mark, you know. So Mark Ritchie, your Secretary of State, who I agree does a very, very good job. So there may be something coming out of Ramsey County where...
In September, we'll hear the ruling. And one last thing.
Go.
Michelle Bachmann's opponent has gotten up to $2 million. Her name is State Senator Terrell Clark. Terrell Clark for Congress. Unfortunately, Michelle Bachmann has twice as much, $4 million. I just heard it on the news tonight.
Thank you. Thank you for using your airwaves.
Give money to Terrell Clark to go against Michelle Bachmann.
Thanks, Nora. Appreciate the call.
Thanks, Brad. Good night.
Good night. Julian. Julian in Wilmington, California. Very quickly, Julian, what's up?
Okay, I'm about as progressive liberal as they basically get.
That means you're probably not, but go ahead.
Oh, yes, I am.
Okay, go ahead.
And the thing is, this is that I do not support this cap and trade legislation, because even though it has a lot of great things in it, that is a small part of the bill.
Yeah.
Electric cars, wind turbines, geothermal, all of that.
Yeah.
The big money is being done to subsidize nuclear power.
Yeah.
Okay, because nuclear companies can't get any type of insurance, so the government has to guarantee these plants. A lot of times they go bad, so we're on the hook for that. The other thing is the it subsidizes heavily, quote unquote, clean coal, which is an oxymoron.
I hear you. There's a lot of problems. A lot of problems in that bill.
And the third thing is.
Yeah.
Is these government credit debits for carbon.
Yeah.
Okay. Who's going to trade them? Yes, of course, Wall Street.
Yeah,
and
well,
I think,
you got to stop. Julian, I got to go. I hear you, though. I do hear you, and I appreciate that. But you know what? We got to start somewhere. Seriously. Chris in Raleigh, North Carolina. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Chris.
How you doing?
Oh, this is Chris. Oh, Chris Teleska from Verified Vote. Oh, Chris, I'm running out. I'm doing fine, but not going to give you enough time that you need, unless you can say it in 15 seconds. Sorry, man.
I just wanted to say that, you know, a lot of the things you've been talking about, you know, with the DREs on the paper trail. We have a paper trail on our Ivotronics here in North Carolina.
Right.
And the industry says it's been about a 1.5% to 2% failure rate.
Yep.
Real-world experience in some of our counties is as high as 9%.
Yeah, and listen, nobody counts them. You can game them. A touchscreen machine with or without a paper trail means nothing. Let me give your website. That's ncvoter.net, right, Chris?
That's Joyce's website.
What's yours?
Well, it's just Google No IRVNC. That's my blog.
No IRVNC. Thank you, brother. Appreciate all you do. Sorry I had to have more time. Never enough time. Well, we'll be back with more time tomorrow here on the Mike Malloy program. Two more nights in for Mike Malloy. Don't be sad. Thank you for joining me, America. Until tomorrow, we'll see you at bradblog.com. Keep it lit.